phone lines are open at 221-1402. On News Talk 1400 KQMS.
Hey, good morning, North State. Welcome to News Talk 1400 KQMS. This is Carl Bott, and we are back again. And we are here, and we feel very safe this morning, and I'll tell you why in a couple of minutes. First, I'm joined today, of course, by my producer, Kelly Frost, Jr.
Hey, good morning, Carl.
How you doing, Kelly?
Good. How you doing?
Hair's growing out?
Kind of.
You know what? We saw some people this weekend. This guy had a mohawk that was spiked up with different colors, and this was a meeting of the Christian kids. But this was down in L.A., so I guess you have to expect that. Yeah. And, of course, I'm joined by my beautiful partner, Linda Bott.
Good morning. What's wrong with a mohawk?
There was nothing wrong with a mohawk.
You can have a mohawk in any place in the United States or any place in the world. It doesn't mean anything except for that you're colorful.
Well, it's colorful. Is that it? Okay. It was colorful there last night. Yeah, it was. Okay. We were down in Anaheim at a business conference. But what happened is, I don't know if it's just us or if it's the state, but while we were down there, the wildfire started. And right in the middle of Anaheim, you know what? As bad as it used to be around here, we had the smoke and the ash coming down to the streets. They were shutting down swimming pools at major hotels because of the amount of ash that was in the water. 500 homes in this one mobile home park burnt.
In Sylmar.
500 out of 600, and probably another, that other 100, probably another 50 or 60 were damaged. So, you know, the things that we went through for 2 months, they're kind of having a major catastrophe down there in 3 days, including homes that were $6, $7, $8 million homes just going up in flames.
In the Montecito area, but we need to keep these families in our prayers because it's always a horrific thing if someone loses all of their, you know, worldly possessions.
Yeah, we heard somebody say that, you know, they gotten killed in the stock market. You know, they lost their money. They were 65 years old. They lost a lot of their money in the stock market, and now they've just lost their home and all their possessions. They said, you know, these things are getting a little tough up there, right? You know, right before Christmas.
We have some great guests in the studio, and on a more positive note.
On a very positive note, I feel very safe. We have all types of police experience in this police in our station, our police station right here. We have moved the police station into KQMS right here with Linda and I. And today we have our former chief, Leonard Modi.
Good morning. Great to be here.
And our new chief, Peter Hansen.
Good morning.
And you know what you do? You got the leadership from the past and the new leadership going into the future. So we're going to take a quick break here. And when we do, we're going to come back. We're going to ask Chief Modi a few questions and then Chief Hansen. So this is Carl Bott here on News Talk 1400 KQMS. Phone lines here are 221-1402. Get ready to start calling because we're going to talk about a number of things, including ordinances that have gone away. So join us on the other side.
The smell will tell you it's arrived. That for in today's running record search line.
Hey, this is Carl Bott, and welcome back to News Talk 1400 KQMS here. And I am joined by previous chief, Leonard Modi, and present chief of our Reading Police Department, Peter Hansen. So, Chief Modi, let's start with you.
Yeah, the easy ones are for me, right?
That's right. Hey, first of all, congratulations on two things. One, on your tenure as the police chief here. Can't please everybody all the time. And also your recent election into the County Board of Supervisors.
Yeah, thank you. I had a great run with the police department, 31 years and 6 years as the chief, but I'm really looking forward to my new job at the County Supervisors.
Well, I've got Chief, when you look back in this 31 years, what would you consider some of your biggest accomplishments here for the City of Reading and the police department?
Well, a couple. One was having a really strong stance against gangs, keeping gangs out of the North State. And starting the Shasta Anti-Gang Enforcement Unit was a big step for the North State, I think, to do that. And that brought 19 different agencies together here in Shasta County. So I think that was a great moment for this area to do that. And then one of the second things that people probably don't think about much but probably deal with every day is the increase in traffic enforcement that we do to decrease the number of people who are getting hurt on our roadways.
I know that you've been on our show before, and we talked about that, and we'll talk about the cameras here in a minute. But one of the things that you said was that you've got a much better chance of being damaged, injured, in a car wreck than you have in any type of violent confrontation with bandits or thieves or whatever.
Well, it's really true, too. When you look at our stats, we may have one or two homicides in a year, but we'll have maybe up to 8 to 10 people killed in car wrecks. So it's obviously you're more likely to get hurt in a car wreck than you are by someone entering your home.
Well, let's talk about the cameras here. And there has been a number of people talking, there's all types of numbers flying around, how much it costs, for running a stoplight, how much it's costing the city and that. And I'm sure, and Chief Hansen, you can weigh in on this too, because you've kind of inherited this. But one of the things that I saw was, it cost X thousands of dollars per camera. And how much does it cost for each camera per month?
It's not actually cameras, it's intersections and what they call is approaches to the intersection. But it's about $6,000 a month at the intersections.
Okay, and then how much do we recoup in the city?
Well, the bigger question is how much do we pay? And the question, and the answer is zero.
We don't pay anything for that.
We don't pay anything. The vendor only gets his money if enough fine money is brought in. He gets paid, and then what's left over, the city keeps. But if we don't bring in enough fine money, then he sort of has to eat that loss and continues each month going forward.
Okay, so if, say you make $4,000 a month on that intersection, he gets that $4,000, but we don't have to pay anything extra.
That's correct.
So if you make $20,000 on that intersection, he gets the $6,000, and the city gets more.
That's correct. You got it.
Okay, that I don't believe that came out in anything I read, and I read a lot about it.
Well, it has been out on a number of occasions, but people just don't want to believe it, and they continue to confuse it. But it really is the way it's set up with the contract we have is it's kind of protects the city from any loss.
And okay. to go further or deeper, who is the vendor, and where are they from?
Well, it's a company called Redflex. They're one of the largest companies in the world that do red light cameras. They're out of Arizona. We investigated a number of different companies and decided they were the best, that they had a good reputation, and that they were fair and honest, and they provided a good product, and so we went with them.
Okay. Now, I've just seen in the news lately they're starting to bring lawsuits about whether the cameras at intersections are constitutional, I think is what they said.
Well, there have been some lawsuits in different states, none of them dealing with Redflex. And a lot of them tend to be because people have tinkered with the yellow lights and the timing. Mm-hmm. But our lights are set by Caltrans standards, and we adhere to those. And we don't try to shorten the yellow light or lengthen the green light or something. So that's where people have gotten into trouble. But
well, I know down in San Diego, they had to throw out like 4,000 or 5,000 of these because they found out that the lights have been shortened by, and believe it or not, a half a second or a second, and that made such a huge difference that when people, when they started checking these, they had to throw out every one of these violations that came through these lights. So,
and that's true, and that was about, I think, 4 or 5 years ago.
Yes, it was.
That was a different company. But also, you're right, it was the city that was changing their yellow light timing, and that's just not fair. So we have not done any of that. We made sure that we were adhering to the Caltrans standards, and so we've not we've sort of stayed away from that to make sure we don't go down that path.
Okay.
A lot of people talk about revenue and the amount of money that's involved with the red light camera. Well, that was never the goal of the red light cameras at all. The goal was to reduce traffic accidents, not only at those particular intersections, but across the city, and we've actually seen a significant reduction in traffic accidents because of the residual effect of people driving more carefully. And the city engineers continuously monitor our intersections to ensure the lights are properly timed and set to improve traffic flow as well as being within the legal limits.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Do they work? And you're saying they do.
Well, interestingly enough, the number of violations at those intersections have actually dropped. We're getting fewer red light violations there.
Well, I think that if you don't know by now that there's a camera at two or three of these intersections, you're not trying very hard because, the signs are everywhere. And, some of the people were talking about the problem is that people seeing it the last second going to jam on their brakes. There's going to be more wrecks and everything. But
it didn't happen. We did the studies, and we did not have an increase. Maybe even a decrease in accidents in general, but not an increase in rear-end accidents. And it just has not – all the fears that people have are just not proven out.
Well, you know, one of the things we do is we fear the unknown. Hey, look, this is Carl Bott here on News Talk 1400 KQMS. My guests are former Chief Police Chief Leonard Modi and our new Police Chief Peter Hansen. We've got to sell some things, so join us on the other side. Hey, this is Carl Bott. Welcome back to News Talk 1400 KQMS. Phone lines here, 221-1402. Our guests are former Police Chief Leonard Modi and our new Police Chief Peter Hansen. Okay, I'm going to throw one at you here. No, this is Chief Modi because it came under your watch. The new police station, it is still coming back and forth here. The cost of it, the where it's going to be, all that. Can you kind of give us your thoughts on it? And then Chief Hansen, please weigh in on this as you can.
Well, the need is still there. It's a terrible building that the police department is housed in now. It needs to be moved to a bigger location with more space for growth and just to accommodate the workforce that we have today. I think that the plan they came up with was to do it in sort of steps and to hold the cost down initially is a good plan. It will be very workable for the police department to do that. And then the big issue was the South City Park, but the city is looking at other sites closer to City Hall that will preserve South City Park. And I think that's hopefully a doable proposition, which I think they're going to look at very carefully. So I'm still very hopeful. It's going to be something that has to be done sooner or later. It's going to be probably a little tougher to do it right now, but I think it just gets more costly if you wait.
Well, you know, having been in the police station, and I was going to talk about this, you know, when I did a ride-along, and I've talked about ride-alongs I've done before, and it is. I mean, I've never seen a police station for a city this size that small. With you've got the dog cages in the interview rooms, and a few other things. But I think somebody, Patrick Jones, one of the councilmen, has said there's another building out there that for half the price it can be refurbished and that it meets the requirements.
Well, I think Patrick's wrong, unfortunately. It's easy to look at other buildings and say you can buy it cheap, and that's true. But you still have to retrofit it to the emergency services standards. And then on top of that, you got to put all the guts back in to make it usable, just like you would any police station. And that's going to cost the same, whether it's in a new building or an old building. So what you're really buying is a piece of land and four walls and a roof that you have to retrofit to stand up to earthquakes. And I've talked to a number of architects, not just the local one here, and they all say the same thing, that's very expensive and typically tends to be more expensive than starting from scratch. Plus, you have to buy the building and the property.
Now, what's one of the things that people maybe don't understand is that the police station has got to be the epicenter of communications in case of an emergency here, like a huge earthquake that destroys other buildings, destroys our other lines of communication, that they've got to have the radios, they've got to be able to transmit and be able to send out, and be able to be the communication center, be the ops center for a natural disaster.
That's correct. And so in the case of a large earthquake, it's not only that it withstands the earthquake, but it has to still be functional afterwards. And that's why you have to have the higher standards for these kind of buildings.
Okay, you know, some of the other questions that came up was, what about having, you know, other, like, smaller local stations out, you know, like kind of almost like a web of
things or something like that.
Yeah.
That came up, and you know, we looked at that, and we're not that big of a city where we need that. In fact, our biggest concern is that we're split apart already with our current setup with investigations down the street, and we need to be in the same building for better communication and efficiencies within the department and with our employees, sharing of information about who's doing what and the bad guys. But the other part that goes along with that is the cost. If you have satellite locations around the city, you've got to staff those. That means you've got to have, instead of one front counter person, you have to have four front counter people. Instead of one phone at the front counter, you've got to have four phones. Instead of one copy machine, you've got to have four, and on and on and on. So actually, it's more costly not only building satellite locations, but more staffing.
No, the police department... We function basically where we deliver the service to you. You pick up the phone and an officer comes to your business or to your home, and that's how we deliver service personally. And so the vast majority of our service is done by out in the field. And so our officers, because they have computers in the car and cell phone, basically have their roving office with them. So a centralized location for a police station, particularly in a city of this size, is very important. And that's also why location plays such a big part into selecting a proper site for the police station. You know, some of the other buildings that have been talked about, might have the right number of square footage, but not in a good location. For example, the building that was next to Reading Medical Center, we would be right in the middle of a hospital medical complex and really be in the way of any future growth, down the road for any medical needs. So, location is very, very important, and as well as how we deliver our service.
Well, what about, they've talked about, right there where the softball field is, but I've heard something that it may be moving from there, the one across from right next to the Safeway
Right. We're actually doing environmental studies right now on all of the different possible locations down along the City Hall complex area, the area between Parkview and Cypress. So there's several sites in that area being looked at. There was some community objection to the South City Park location. We listened to what the community had to say and are exploring other options.
Great. Okay, look, we've got to take a quick break here. The phone lines are lit up, so as soon as we get back from our break, we'll get to the phone lines. This is Carl Bott on News Talk 1400 KQMS. Hey, this is Carl Bott. Welcome back to News Talk 1400 KQMS. Good morning, Tom.
Oh, good morning. Say, the police department down there, is the jail there? Is it all housed in one building there?
No, the jail is actually run by the county, and it's up near the county courthouse.
So what, you're basically running out of space down there? What's the deal? I haven't followed this a whole lot.
Well, the police station currently is in about 33,000 square feet, but according to the studies that have been done, just to accommodate the existing personnel, we should be in a building that's about 51,000 square feet, so about 50% bigger. So that's how jammed in we are in our current building, and then you need to have some additional space for growth for the next 30 or 40 years.
That's the trouble, more government growth.
But
an increasing problem. But now what's the price tag going to be on this thing? Because, we're in a shrinking economy right now. And land values are going down, so revenues are going to go down on taxes. And I don't know if this is the time to be spending that kind of money building a new police station.
Well, I could tell you, first of all, about government growth, you're going to need more policemen over the years. And that's what we're talking about, is additional space for more policemen. As far as the cost of the building, it's estimated at about $32 million, although we think that with the way the economy is right now, you could probably get a bid that's much, much lower than that. So it's a good time to be out bidding a project.
Have you folks thought of possibly going down to Arizona, to Maricopa County, and checking out what Sheriff Joe's doing down there? And you may have a lot less criminals if you house them the way he does, because it seems to me he's cut crime quite a bit and has cost a lot less.
I don't know, Chief Hansen, do you think we should dress our prisoners in pink?
Well, we talk about what's going on in Arizona every now and then, and he's the subject of many lawsuits, but quite honestly, the standards in California for housing of prisoners is dramatically different than what's in Arizona.
Yeah, it's better than housing Marines out in Camp Fallujah in Iraq.
Come on. I mean, we're California's kind of a lunatic state anyway. It seems like, look what it costs us to run everything. But I think that the way those prisoners are treated down there, it makes them think twice before they want to go out and commit a crime and get thrown back in the slammer when they got to live like that.
Hey, Tom.
I think it ain't a bad idea.
Hey, Tom, thanks a lot for your phone call.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
And I'll just say this. Hopefully Tom will call back tomorrow when the sheriff is here, because that's a sheriff issue, not a police issue.
That's right. By the way, Sheriff Tom Basenko is going to be on our show tomorrow morning. And that is, and you can tell, the relationship we have between the city, county. I mean, one, they respect each other. It's obvious. But any chance they get, little digs going in there. Ask the sheriff about that. And the sheriff says, why don't you ask Chief Modi about that? It's great. I get questions sent to me by both of them for either one.
So we've heard a lot from Chief Modi, former Chief Modi, always Chief Modi, but our new chief, Chief Hansen. How does it feel in the new shoes?
Well, it's exciting, of course, and a little nerve-wracking. The transition is always difficult. I've been very fortunate that the chief has been here with me, helping me transition. That's been great. And certainly there's lots of opportunities, but there's a lot of challenges ahead, too. Tough economic times mean challenges for local government. And, we've had some challenges here over the last couple of weeks already. So it's a combination of challenges and opportunities.
Now I hear you're a local boy.
Well, local boy in that I've been here for 25 years, but I actually grew up in Southern California.
You're a local boy.
Yeah. Well, it's 20-year rule that sort of kicks in after that.
Well, we're not local boys then. So what do you? What is the?
I'm not a boy.
Well, I
in case you haven't noticed. Sorry. Sidebar.
I've noticed it, as has anybody else. I mean, there isn't a Patriot Guard writer that doesn't know who you are.
What do you do when you're not being chief, Chief Hansen?
Oh, I spend as much time as I can at home. One of the challenges of this newest job is the demands on my time. I've already discovered how much extra time away from family is needed, and that's one thing that Leonard actually cautioned me about. But, you know, I like spending time at home with my family. My wife and I spending time, you know, walks and, you know, live in the hills a little bit. And our daughters take a lot of my wife's time, and I try and spend as much time as I can supporting what they're into.
So what's your vision for the Reading Police Department? What changes do you would you like to see here in the next during your tenure?
Well, there's lots of things that we can improve upon. We have a very outstanding police department, you know, just great employees, a very hardworking police force. And by any measuring stick, you know, they're just a top-performing agency. So it's very difficult to come along and say, you know, this needs to be changed, because it really doesn't. What we need to do is stay focused and on track with some of the programs that we have had in place for many years, including, you know, the gang enforcement and traffic enforcement. But we're also going to focus on supporting our victims and, you know, going after some of the parolees or the people that need extra attention. I'd like to work on enhancing some of our training amongst our department, because as budget cuts hit us hard, we may have to cut back on some out-of-the-area training and focus on doing some more in-house training.
When you say in-house training, does that mean on just mainly legal issues? Does this mean physical issues, entering, search, seizure,
really
shooting?
All of the above. With the high caliber of officers we have in our department, we have a lot of people that are subject matter experts and can provide the training themselves, but it involves everything from, you know, case law to search and seizure to tactics to you know, driving to all kinds of things that we can do in-house to enhance the training. And by enhancing training, we're actually improving service to the community.
You know, I rode along with your officers, and I have to admit that I was there when they entered a house looking for drugs that evening, and I've got to talk about the professionalism of your officers. Like, we'd be driving down, and we're talking about the computers, how you can check license plates, you know, to see if there's any wants or anything like this. And you know how I wanted to check all the vehicles that had Obama stickers on them, and the police officer refused to do that. I mean, I thought that okay, but I said, how about just one of them? And he refused to do that. He said, I can't do that. I said, okay. Anyway,
well, one of the things that
that's a joke.
Actually,
that's a joke.
I like to commend Chief Modi on is that if you hire, you know, good people to start with, and then provide them with the skills and training, a lot of the rest of it takes care of itself. You know, going back to the Marine Corps, one of their mottos is to hire a good person, build a good Marine, and the rest of it takes care of itself. You don't have to worry about battles because they all take care of themselves. And that's the same thing here. We start by hiring very good people. And in the Chief's legacy here, he has hired very good people. We've hired about 80-something employees in the last 6 years, and they've all been top-notch, high-quality people and a lot of local kids who really appreciate our community.
Are you currently recruiting?
Well, we're always recruiting, but with a budget situation we might be facing, we don't have any openings right this minute. So we've got a couple of people we're looking into. Again, the top caliber people. One's a local kid. So we're always looking for good people, and the positions will always be there, but we may have to slow down just a bit.
Okay. Hey, look, this is Carl Bott here on News Talk 1400 KQMS. We have former Chief Leonard Modi and our present police chief, Peter Hansen, here. Join us on the other side. Hey, this is Carl Bott. Welcome back to News Talk 1400 KQMS here.
Bridge over troubled waters, you know.
221-1402. That's okay. Just talk on me. Okay, your turn.
Let me talk all over you. Okay. How's that? While we were at the break, we heard something that was really very interesting. Usually just in and this is for you, Chief Hansen. Usually it's a high school requirement. You have to have a high school diploma to become a policeman.
Correct.
Okay. But they're staggering, wonderful numbers that we can be proud of as the citizens here in Reading. Why don't you share that with our listeners about the education?
Linda, you're right. To be a policeman in California, the basic requirement is a high school education. But most of the officers we hire have a much higher level of education. Over 70% have at least their Associate of Arts degree, and about 45% have their Bachelor of Arts degree. And we have five officers now who are working on their master's degree program. So, you know, we have a high level of education. We strongly encourage that. And, you know, we help the officers as best we can accommodate with schedule modifications to help them assist in getting extra education.
You know, one of the other things, too, we talked about during the break was the number of your newer officers with a military background.
Right. You know, we went through a period of time for many years where it was pretty rare to see a policeman coming along or anyone with any kind of military experience. The trend is starting to change, and we're seeing more and more young people come along who have served our country in the military and, in fact, may have even served overseas in Iraq or Afghanistan and have some combat experience. So that's a change. You know, back in the 70s, we had a lot of officers coming who had Vietnam experience. And then for many years there was none, and we're seeing that trend come out again. And you know, these are great people who have served our country quite notably, and you know, we're really seeing a lot of maturity in these young people.
Well, you know, it's talking to our young veterans that have come back. They're going to college now at Shasta and others. One of the things they have a problem with is the fact here they are, they're 23, 24 years old, taking the beginning courses, and their interaction with the students that are there when they're 18 is. They look at them and the things they're saying and, you know, and their beliefs, and it is so diametrically opposed to what they've learned about the world. So, you know, it's and all of them are combat veterans. And it's just a fact out there that when you're put into combat, you have to mature quick. And if you don't, well, you don't last there. So one of the questions I have, though, is, and this is probably for as a border supervisor side for you, Chief, but also for Chief Hansen here, is are there points given? Is there any added value for being in the military when you apply for a job with the city and county?
Yes, there are. They do add points to the scores when people apply for certain jobs, and so you do get military points.
So you do. If you serve your country, you do get an additional, I guess, points or percentages because you have served the country.
That's
and
correct.
Have that training.
Well, it's not just a training. It's the fact is that they've served the country. So they do get an additional percentage when they do apply for the jobs here.
Yeah, usually when you go through the testing process or some procedure where you're scored for something, you'll get additional points during that process.
I know that the state of California does that, and for federal jobs they do that. I didn't know if the city and county did. That was one of my questions.
I know for sure for the county. I would expect that they do, but I know for sure the city does.
Well, I expect as county supervisor, you can check
sure
that out.
I will.
221-1402. If you have any questions, now's the time for Chief Modi and Chief Hansen. Get on the phone and ask your questions now.
And it also can be as far as a supervisor, because one of the questions I wanted to ask Chief Modi, now as Supervisor Modi, is what's some of the things you want to accomplish? What do you want to bring to this board of supervisors now that you're getting ready to seat there?
Well, you know, the first thing that's going to overwrite everything is going to be the budget, and that's just going to be that way until they get through this next year or two. But what I hope to see happen, and I think that the cities and the county are ready for this before me getting there, so hopefully I can just be part of it, is sort of a working together on a lot of different issues. Regional planning is very important to the North State, and we should work together on those kind of things. We should work on where our growth should be, and it needs to be where the infrastructure is, not just out in the middle of the hill someplace. So those are the things I hope I can be part of and work towards for everybody.
Well, what about the they voted on, I think, bringing in the wind turbines up in Bernie or Alturas?
I think they're still, aren't they still working on that a little bit?
I thought they had voted one time for that, but there's a lot of people have some consternation about that, you know, from anything from bird kills to what it looks like.
Well, and that certainly is an issue, although, as we all know, dependence on foreign oil is not good, so we need to find other alternatives to generate power for our country, and certainly wind power is a great way to do something that doesn't pollute our environment, so...
Well, that's one of the things, too, is that we're going to be talking about this week is the proposed increase by REU of 7% on electricity. But one of the things also to go back to with Chief Hansen is one of the first things I believe the chief did was He wanted to cut down on the paperwork. So you took a you want to take a huge ordinance off the books.
Well, we have an ordinance on the book dealing with bicycle licensing, and it's a fairly old law and really has been not enforced or utilized at all for many years. And the current ordinance requires business owners who sell bicycles and people that purchase bicycles to register them with the city. It really is an unnecessary law because now that we can track bicycles through their serial numbers and through ownership records, it really becomes unnecessary. So we're asking council tomorrow night to modify that ordinance to keep in place the ability of the city to regulate operations of bicycles or to dispose of surplus bicycles that we get, you know, found property, those sorts of things, but get rid of the licensing ordinance.
When you said you can track bicycles already?
Well, when you purchase a bicycle now, it'll have a serial number on it. So the person you buy it from, the local vendor, will have it on the receipt, and you can write down the serial number, and we can track them that way if it's stolen.
Okay, I see what you mean.
We'll just ask you for the serial
number. You're just not tracking me as I ride my bicycle through
that's
the...
That's just the old-fashioned way.
Is that a collar I have to wear? What?
If it has a GPS on it or something, we can find out where you're at.
Okay, look, this is News Talk 1400 KQMS. We've got to take a quick break here. Phone lines are backing up, and just join us on the other side. This is Carl Bott. Welcome back to News Talk 1400 KQMS. Jim, good morning.
Good morning. This is to both the police officers there. There's what's been some talk a week or so ago that the Reading Police Department has not really been too happy about concealed weapons permits. Now, there was also some talk saying that there are several people, a very low number in Reading, who have been issued a concealed weapons permit by the Reading Police Department. I don't know if this is true, I'm saying. Let me finish here. And how did this policy that the Reading Police Department doesn't feel the need and rather to burden the sheriff with issuing these things here, when did that policy start, and do you think it should be readdressed? And I'm going to hang up and listen. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. I'm sorry. Thanks, Jim. Okay.
Chief Hansen, you want me to go first?
Yes, please.
It is correct. We only have about 9 concealed weapon permits out there, and the sheriff has about 4,500. So you can see there's a big difference. But it's pretty typical up and down the state that the sheriffs give out more than the police chiefs. Chiefs tend to be a little more conservative about it. There's not a policy that's against it, though. In fact, I issued one here about 4 months ago. So the police department has issued permits, but most people tend to go to the sheriff's office because it's, quite frankly, easier to get and less restrictions, and so they go there.
What are the less restrictions?
Well, we require a $500,000 policy, insurance policy, so that liability-wise, and also the training standards. I think we require a little more hours on taking a 24-hour class, I think, for handling a firearm.
I don't think those are bad standards.
Chief Hansen.
Chief Modi and I are both supportive of the Second Amendment and the right of people to have weapons, but we believe in responsible gun ownership, and we think that the training requirement and the liability requirement protects the person that has the CCW permit as well as the agency that issues it.
Well, what about the fact of people that have been in the military and been handling weapons? So they need to have a $500,000 insurance policy?
Well, usually it's just a rider on your existing policy. It's not that expensive. There's certainly room to have discussion about that. In answer to the caller's question, I haven't really turned anybody down. People just don't come to the police department. They just go to the sheriff's office.
Well, I think part of that, when I didn't know about the $500,000. I mean, I can understand the training. I believe in training, too. I mean, but I also understand that there's never been an incident, and I could be wrong, there's never been an incident where there's been a problem with somebody that's been issued a concealed carry?
That's not true.
Okay.
I can tell you of a number of occasions, I'm sure Chief Hansen can as well, is where our officers have stopped people who have a concealed weapons permit, they have not told the officers they have them. They have the weapon concealed. There's been cases where they've been involved in like a bar fight and they have a weapon with them. There's cases of them driving their cars while drinking with their gun in there. And then when they get stopped, they immediately pull out their concealed weapons permit and want a break or something. And not that's a small number. I might give the idea that's hundreds of people, but certainly there's a number of people who've done that who are irresponsible.
And those people should have they should have those pulled immediately.
And I think, and I'll quite frankly say, those cases have all involved the sheriff's department, and the sheriff has been very responsive in looking into those and taking action, because he agrees that that's irresponsible.
It is irresponsible, and if a person, first thing it is, as soon as you walk into a bar, you don't have a weapon on. You've taken that weapon off. I mean, that's just one of the first rules.
Yeah. Alcohol and guns don't mix very well.
No, alcohol and driving and alcohol and other things don't mix either. So, I mean, it's the type of thing that it's anybody that's going to carry a weapon, wants to carry a weapon, or drive a car, or drive a motorcycle, has got to be responsible. So, that was an interesting question, because I'd heard that too, is that the city is very difficult to get a concealed carry permit.
Well, again, very few people really ever come to the city.
Okay. And you know what? I really appreciate former Chief Modi and our new police Chief Hansen joining us today. And Chief Hansen, I'd like you to come back on a regular basis and keep us updated on what's going on with the police department and anything that you'd like to get out to the community. We have a lot of listeners out here.
I would enjoy that. Thank you very much.
Okay. Like tomorrow, our guest is going to be Sheriff Tom Basenko, and he's going to get a chance to come back at you all, because I'm going to say things that you said about him during the break. Anyway, hey, look, this is Carl Bott. And not just my partner, but my beautiful wife, Linda Bott, here on News Talk 1400 KQMS. Join us tomorrow. Racing with the wind.